Hey, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. I am Pinky Frankham, and that is Chris. I don't want to be the Brain Finkston. How you doing, man?
I'm well, except one thing.
You don't know who Pinky and the Brain are.
I know exactly who Pinky and the Brain are.
because we be the Brain.
No, I will tell you this, because when your nickname is Finky.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a very long stretch. You know who Pinky and the Brain is, because people would sing the song, except instead of Pinky, they'd say Finky. And
I got a lot of Frankenstein references.
Frankenstein? I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see it. Didn't another paramedic once get you a beer mug that said Frankenstein on it?
No.
Oh, there's another paramedic that wanted to get you one.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, most of the time people like, hey, I saw you the other day, or you were walking across the parking lot. You what reminded me of? This conversation never goes well for me. It's never like Tom Selleck or anything like that. So I'm standing at work at the soups window talking to LH, former soup, now married to DH. And paramedic comes in. She goes, hey, Mark, I was watching you walk across the parking lot. You know what you reminded me of? And I turn and I look at the supervisor and I go, this never goes well for me. And he kind of looked at me weird. And I look back and I go, no, what I remind you of? She goes, Bigfoot. I went, see, told you.
Oh, he just started
busting out laughing. I'm like, it's never anything like Tom Selleck. It's never, you know, any positive thing. It's like the biggest, hairiest, grossest thing you can think of. Hey, that's Frankham. So.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry, man.
Because it's how the brain interprets things.
Yeah, well.
You know.
That's a good segue right there.
It's a good segue because today we're going to be talking about the brain. Now, this this episode is sponsored by the – it's not sponsored by anybody, but we were willing to take sponsors at any time.
Please.
This is from one of our listeners inspired this show. Goes by Mikey. He gave me permission to use the name Mikey. He knows who he is. And he was wanting us to do a show on neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity.
Yes, which is an interesting subject, but as we've spoken about before, sometimes there are subjects that you're either going to be knee-deep in information of very technical nature, and it's very light on just, this is what it is. So, Mike, thank you for the idea, because you did sponsor, inspire this episode, because I started researching the brain to be able to explain everything I thought we'd be talking about with neuroplasticity, but neuroplasticity, it was either like, yeah, this is neuroplasticity. Two paragraphs later, you're done. Or it was like an NICH or NCIHI .gov 40-page paper.
Long story short, right. We no read big words. We read small words.
You've heard us try to say the big words.
Neuroplasticity has big words. Mikey, by the way, right now is probably like, why the fuck did I trust these guys? Why did I send this to them?
I thought they were competent. Well, sir, you listen to the podcast, you know better.
Right.
So the brain, you had me at hello.
Look, Mikey, next time just email me instead. I clearly carry the show. Mark has no credibility.
Well, that's why you're the brain.
Right, exactly.
I'm Pinky, you know, I mean.
Exactly.
OB-GYN. So, the brain, we all have one. At least I hope we do. Undead creatures crave them.
Yeah, absolutely. Which means I'm safe.
And I'm not firmly convinced that most people use theirs.
Yeah, so, neither am I.
You know.
Because if they did, we wouldn't have jobs.
Exactly. So,
but it is amazing.
If the conversation went here, watch this, and somebody else said, no, I don't think you should do that.
What would we do?
Workers. Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, most people are like, watch this. This guy's going to do something worth going on YouTube.
Yeah. The brain is
also
pretty amazing, though.
I was going to say, we have some excellent shows coming up. I think everybody's going to like them.
I teased a little bit.
Why did we plug in the third mic?
Yeah.
That's my question. That was your question, actually. But, it's interesting. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. Next couple shows should be pretty good.
You could call it a bonus mic if you wanted to.
Yeah. Are we, anyway, we'll talk about that later.
So the I don't brain. Think we're fooling anybody. There are zero people who are tricked by this.
Well, the thing is, I mean, unless people have gone back and listened, Mm-hmm. Well, no, because, I mean, we've had a number of other people on the show before. But those of us who know us know exactly what we're talking about because, like you said, we're not... Yeah, we're not that.
Special. This isn't that clever.
We're not.
But you know what, though, is now there's at least a small section of listeners right now that are just killing themselves, being like, "Look, I don't think I know what it is," or they do know what it is, and they're like, "But that, I didn't think that was simple enough," and now they're just murder. Like, what is it?
We entangled that so deep in our own stupidity that now we're beginning people that knew what the answer was to doubt themselves.
And that's generally my goal.
Right. If you can't blind them with brilliance, if you can't bedazzle them with brilliance, blind them with bullshit. So
something like that.
The brain.
Yeah.
So the brain is an amazing 3-pound organ. It's
3 pounds. 2 pounds in some people, but anyway.
That controls all functions of the body except...
Information from the outside. Wait, what?
No. Controls all functions in the body except...
Except what?
Your heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, because it has its own. Well, now...
It has its own brain.
It can impact it by triggering the release of hormones, but it doesn't directly set the pace.
But it doesn't control it.
Yeah.
The brain is... It's a strong, independent heart. Didn't need no brain to help tell it what to do.
Yeah. In fact, the heart will beat outside of your body by itself, at least until it dies.
Oh, it's definitely supported, by the rest of the body. So, 3 pounds of brain interprets information from the outside world. And embodies the essence of mind and soul. So intelligence, creativity, emotion, and memory are a few of the many things governed by the brain.
Yeah.
Protected within the skull, the brain is composed of the cerebrum, the cerebellum, and the brainstem. Now, the brainstem in the back of the cerebellum is what they kind of refer to as your reptilian brain, isn't it?
They believe mostly the brainstem. I believe the cerebellum is actually where...
where God lives.
It's kind of where what most people would refer to as muscle memory is stored. Mm-hmm. It's
I'm actually going to get into that here more in depth, I think, a little bit later.
Gotcha. So shut the fuck up. Okay, copy.
So stop saying the lead. Come on, man.
Oh, like so, literally 2 paragraphs down. It starts talking.
It goes, no, the later on we get a little more into muscle memory and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So, the cerebrum is the largest part of the brain, is composed of right and left hemispheres. It's like your butt, right and left hemispheres. I had a friend tell his daughter one time, she was very, very young, like a toddler, and she was playing with her belly button. And that's your belly button. If you unscrew that, your butt falls off. It's always stuck with me. It performs higher functions like interpreting touch, vision, and hearing, as well as speech, reasoning, emotions, learning, and fine control of movement.
Does it really, though?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
It says right there.
Oh, fair.
Did you not read the prep?
I read it.
So, yeah, I mean, even down to like, I think we went over the whole finger of death warm-up technique, Do you remember that? Was that something we did?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. I believe we put up a video of it on social media.
People have to know if you don't warm up before the finger of death, man, you end up pulling a muscle.
Yeah, you could hurt somebody or yourself, mostly yourself.
So the cerebellum is located under the cerebrum. Its function is to coordinate muscle movements, maintain posture, which it does not do for me very well, and balance depending on the day.
Yeah.
Some days, apparently my cerebrum is slacking off as I stumble all over scenes.
We have some patients who I think their cerebellum is having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I have had partners who...
Try and jump wet floor signs?
End up landing on my back and hanging off for dear life?
Yeah. Yep. Don't know which partner that was. So the brainstem... The brainstem acts as a relay center connecting the cerebrum and cerebellum to the spinal cord. Performs many automatic functions such as breathing, heart rate.
Well, heart rate, not initiating the impulse, but like you said, it does provide like chemicals to stimulate their heart rate.
Yeah. Body temperature, awake and sleep cycles, digestion.
What was that? Did you just check out for a minute?
Sneezing. What?
Did you just check out for a couple seconds?
No.
You're like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It happens to me. Sneezing, coughing, vomiting, and swallowing. In fact, one of the fun things about the brainstem, we'll talk about this a little bit later on. If we talk about, are we going to talk about trauma, brain trauma later on?
I did not specifically bring trauma into it because I figured we'd already did a TBI
episode. That's true.
But if you have something to bring up, I say swing away, my friend.
Yeah. So I would recommend going back and listening to our head trauma and our traumatic brain injury. I believe we actually did two separate episodes, one head trauma, then one on traumatic brain injury specifically, where traumatic brain injury focused on the more long-term impacts versus head trauma was more like what's happening right now. But one of the things that can happen in head trauma when you get a good knock to the skull is you can start getting blood pooling between your skull and your brain. What that'll do is that'll actually start trying to push your brain out the foramen magnum, which is a hole in the bottom of your skull. And then that hole, that is where the spinal cord comes out, essentially. Well, the brain and the spinal cord connects to the brainstem. So what ends up happening is the blood will try and push your brain through this hole. And the first thing to get pushed down that hole is the brainstem. And what the brainstem controls is breathing, controls heart rate, like we said, through hormones, and vomiting. And so one of the things you will see in head injuries is you'll see vomiting, for one, but you'll actually see problems with breathing and heart rate. And this is actually what starts contributing to something we call Cushing's triad. So in a situation where someone has been hit in the head hard enough that their brain is starting to get pushed down this hole, we call that herniation, we'll see Cushing's triad. And one of the things that we'll see, there's three signs. One is going to be an increase in blood pressure. You're going to see a decrease in heart rate, and you're going to see erratic breathing. You see the erratic breathing because breathing, your rate of breathing is controlled in the brainstem, which then gets pushed down that hole. So, back to the general overview.
So, right versus left sides. The cerebrum is divided into two halves, the right and the left hemispheres. They're joined by a bundle of fibers called the corpus callosum that transmits messages from one side to the other. You think they do it like semaphore or smoke signals?
It's pigeons.
Obviously, I didn't even. Why do I even ask these questions? I feel like an idiot. Each hemisphere controls the opposite side of the body. If a stroke occurs on the right side of your brain, your left arm or leg may be weakened or paralyzed. So, yeah, if you're having a left sided stroke, it's actually the right side of the body. Interesting. Not all functions of the hemispheres are shared. They're very territorial in some areas. Fuck off, right side. This is a left side thing. In general, the left side controls speech, comprehension, arithmetic, and writing. So if you meet somebody who's very... I'll say somebody's very left-brained.
Yeah.
And they're usually very analytical. You know, my dad, he was an engineer, and he tends to be much more analytical about stuff. It's, you know, he cooks now. And my parents are getting up in age. They're in their 80s. Hi, Mom. Love you. And...
Really? Your mom looks so much younger than that.
Yeah.
Hi, Mom. Love you.
But it's interesting to watch him cook, because for him, cooking is like 2 cups of this, 1 tablespoon of this, 1 teaspoon of this, not more of a throw it in till it tastes good kind of person. And that just really does not compute. I mean, it does. He's not horrible at it, but it's just sometimes it's a learned trait with him. So. Mm-hmm. The right hemisphere controls creativity, spatial ability, artistic, and musical skills. This is where I get my ability to not be able to draw a stick figure. The left hemisphere is dominant in hand use and language in about 92% of the people. So, the left hemisphere is why most people are right-handed.
Hey, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Are you right-handed?
I am not. I am amongst the top 8%.
Okay. 8%. I think you can cut the word top just out.
No. Lefties in the audience, back me up on this. Top 8% is 92%. 92% are right-handed.
I thought you were
top 8%.
Huh? I thought you were left-handed because you were Canadian.
No, I'm super nice because I'm Canadian.
Yeah, you're not super nice. you're Canadian. You're not super nice.
Well, I'm a mix of nice, and I grew up in Oklahoma. So.
How about this? You are friendly, But if someone out there decently deserves to be told what for, you're not holding back. You're not going to be like,
now, is this right. a positive or negative trait?
What's that?
Is this a positive or negative trait?
I'm going to call it a humorous trait.
I tend not to pull any punches. I'm not like a dick about it. I don't belittle people.
No, I'm joking. You're right.
I don't belittle people, but if somebody's doing something stupid, I'm not above going, yeah, that wasn't real bright.
So. Right. Yeah. But you know, and you treat yourself the same way.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I'm people ask me questions, like, I don't know. Or, you know, what are you doing? How come you missed that? Well, I'm an idiot.
You are definitely a follower in the ways of Jesus Christ. You treat others the way you treat yourself the way you want others to be treated.
Wow. That got really, really religious there for a second.
It sure did.
Mm-hmm. Our new sponsor, the Church of Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ himself.
JC came down, slapped some money on the table, said, talk me up, boys.
We're sitting, could you imagine, we're sitting at a table writing notes back and forth to Jesus Christ with numbers on them, sliding it across the table.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about like notes like they do in movies where you get notes from the executives.
Yeah.
So can we put a little less mark in the next take?
Yeah. That was actually Jesus Christ that left that review.
Right. That's why he only deals with Chris when he's negotiating.
He keeps telling me, he's like, you got to ditch him, man. You ditch him.
I got a Ringo Starr in here waiting for you. Get rid of
you know what?
Pete Starr. No, Pete West.
He signed in. That was the original drummer for the Beatles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you're impressed, aren't you?
I am impressed. I figured you knew who Ringo Starr was. Now, did you know that Pete Best was the original drummer, or do you put it together with a Ringo Starr reference?
I did not know the guy's name was Pete Best. I knew that there was an original drummer that was replaced by Ringo Starr, but I did not know his name.
Okay. Well, now you do. And I expect you to memorize it forever.
It's pretty easy to memorize, actually, so I probably will.
In general, let's see, in about one-third of the people who are left-handed, speech function may be located on the right side of the brain.
Okay, hang on just a quick second. Is his name mm-hmm. Pete Best or Pete West?
See, I said Best, but now you're making me doubt myself.
Because if his name was Pete Best and then he got replaced by another drummer, right. That's terrible, because you should be the best.
Original drummer of the Beatles. Pete Best. Randolph Pete Best. Well, that's a name. Randolph Pete Best is an amateur musician, drummer, and civil servant. He's best known as the original member and the first drummer of the Beatles.
Wow.
From Liverpool. So, yeah, Best. Made me doubt myself. Thanks a lot, man.
I do what I can.
So, in about one-third of the people who are left-handed, speech function may be located on the right side of the brain. Left-handed people may need special testing to determine if their speech center is on the left or right side prior to any surgery in that area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, you know, when you're in the top 8%, you know, special things happen for you.
Yeah, what kind of special things happen for you, Mark?
Hey,
successful
I'm left-handed.
Okay, so writing, you just put a big smudge on your hand. Okay.
I have a voice for radio. I also have a face for radio.
There you go. You know what? Never mind, Mark. Mm-hmm. You win this one.
And my mommy tells me I'm special.
Hats off to you. She tell you you're handsome, too?
Yeah. She's a liar.
You know, it's kind of funny, though. I was about to start making some your mom jokes, but I realized I've met your mom, and I really like her, and I just think that'd be disrespectful.
But you even like her more than you like me.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of people in that category. That's not a small boat.
That you like better than me?
No. I mean, well, that too.
But or that you like their moms better than you like the person?
No. Just people that I like better than you in general.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because if it's the whole mom thing, that's starting to sound a little creepy.
So I do want to point out, I got a really good your mom joke in on one of my partners. So we went to one of the, we'll just say that where we work, there is a local tech giant that has several facilities. And these facilities are like their own little towns. But we're going into one of the ones that's under construction, and there's an elevator. And it's not working, so we have to go around into another elevator. But they couldn't get it to work, and it had a big sign that said, it's a big industrial level elevator, and it said, max weight, 40,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I look over and I said, hey, guys, you know what? This is our bad. I think my partner's mom used this elevator yesterday. Pointing at the sign, to which the guy, the safety people that were there just looked back at us and just looked right. He goes, you are savage, dude. He goes, you guys are savage. And then he responds by saying, jokingly, like, he's like, my mom's dead. And I know his mom isn't dead. Actually, I don't know, but people say that now. They're trying to make you feel bad. And he goes, my mom's dead. And I said, no, she's not. She's getting out of my bed this morning. Just all in one run. And then I'm really hoping his mom isn't actually dead, because that was right. Just fucking terrible.
Or in your bed.
Yeah, except either of those things. And so, right. Anyway. So that was that. He's just shaking his head, and like everyone's shaking their head. In the meantime, we're like, we still haven't gotten to this patient, and I'm like, oh, I should be a professional. I should get back to this. So
was this initials AD?
Yes.
Because he would told me to offer you a burrito.
Oh, fuck him. So. So we're at the post four and we're heading out the taco trucks, and he goes and he's like, hey man, you want me to just grab you a burrito? I'm like, yeah, because I'm just like, my phone's blowing up and I'm kind of buried. I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, whatever the price is, if you're good. He's like, not a problem, man. So he goes, gets a burrito. He's like, well, it's like, what meat do you want? I'm like, dude, if they got pork, like, I could go for some pork. Gives me a burrito. This burrito is damn good. And I get about halfway down it and we get a call. And I'm not going to not eat the burrito just because we got a call. And so,
how many times have I gotten you to do eat things on the way to a call just by telling you you don't have a hair on your ass if you don't finish that by the time we get there?
Well, I think once, but it was a very potent once, because it was an ice cream cone. Which, by the way, I think we've told the story before, but I got to tell it again. By the way, an ice cream cone is not EMS friendly food. Burritos are. You can wrap that up, right. Put it right back in the bag, and that'll stay. But an
ice cream cone. It gets better with age, too.
So. Yeah. I mean, but an ice cream cone, like, you kind of got to eat it right then and there, or you're kind of screwed. And so, Mark, I basically pounded an ice cream cone. We did not have far to go either. And I basically pounded an ice cream cone, and my head hurt so bad that Mark just let me sit in the ambulance for a bit while he went into the call. But anyway, so I'm just downing
this. Trained medical professionals.
Oh, that's what we are. So I'm just downing this burrito, and the last bite, I bite something funky that's in it, and it just sours, and it tastes weird, like a bad chunk of meat or something. And I'm like, oh, God, this isn't great. But that doesn't stop me from continuing to eat the rest of the burrito, which was the mistake. And so we get on scene. And it's to the point where the fire crew is looking at me like, you're good? And I'm like, yeah, we're at the post four taco trucks. He's like, say no more, man. He's like, I'm like, yeah, I just.
There's some good taco. There's a couple of really good places there.
The burrito was really good until whatever the hell was in that last bite, which I think is a small mouse. But I was just like, oh God. And I did not feel great. And I'm like starting to like belch and was like, I'm not good. There's a couple times where I had to turn around and start breathing heavy just to like get enough oxygen and not vomit. I just. Oh, Jesus.
Well, you mentioned you disappeared for about 30 minutes at the hospital.
Yeah, it was not great. Just not a good time. Actually, it was a great time. Who am I kidding? I enjoyed it.
So, left and right side.
Yeah. Moving on.
Lobes of the brain. The cerebral hemispheres have distinct fissures, which divide the brain into lobes. Not like your ears. Each hemisphere has four lobes, front, temporal, parietal, and occipital. Each lobe may be divided once again into areas that are more specific, that serve very specific functions, which we're not really going to get into too much other than to mention them. It's important to understand that each lobe of the brain does not function alone. There are very complex relationships between the lobes of the brain and between the right and the left hemispheres. Who would have thought that something like the brain would be complex?
What?
I know. What? So, Chris, what do you know about the frontal lobe?
Well, I'll tell you what I know about the frontal lobe. This is where you have your personality, behavior, and a lot of your emotions take place. Judgment is a small frontal lobe for me. Planning, problem solving, speech.
Big on problem solving, not great on planning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but you know what? That's a paramedic right there, if there ever was one.
We're all definitely geared to work in the moment.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Now, don't get me wrong, there is a lot of planning in terms of like your training and that kind of stuff, but it's all planning that's planned in a manner that's like, we hope you run into a scenario where this plan works. If not, wing it.
Yeah.
And here's your, in fact, paramedic planning, by the way, is mostly just like a top hat full of things that you can do. And then you just kind of figure out which one of those things you're going to do to problem solve. And that's basically what it is. Speech. So you're speaking, you're writing. There's actually an area of the brain within the frontal lobe called Broca's area. So when you have a stroke and people have difficulty speaking, this is the area that is affected.
And we're going to have a little bit of a Broca's area here in a minute.
Oh, nice. So some body movement, the motor strip of the area of the frontal lobe, intelligence, concentration, and self-awareness. When you hear of people having a lobotomy or lobectomy, it is a...
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
That's actually pretty funny. I don't know why I didn't laugh, but it might have like, oh, that's good.
Oh, dude, you say it all the time when we're getting drunk. At the age of 21, because that's the legal age of drinking.
Absolutely. Dare to keep kids off drugs. Anyway, so yeah. So when they do lobotomy, they take a chunk out of that, and that actually is why the personality dulls in people who have lobotomies. Parietal lobe. So the parietal lobe is going to be off to the side. It interprets language, words, sense of touch, pain, temperature. There's a sensory strip back there. Interprets
signals. That's the other part of the parietal lobe.
What's that?
It's part of the parietal lobe. It's a subsector of the parietal lobe.
Right, yeah. And all these centers I'm talking about right now, these functions are within the parietal lobe. Interprets signals from vision, hearing, motor, sensory, and memory, and spatial and visual perception. Occipital lobe. Go, Mark, go.
Interprets vision, color, light, and movement.
Right, that's all you get.
Cue for temporal lobe.
So the temporal lobe is located under your temple. Go figure if you know where it goes.
I'm part of the podcast.
Look, Mom, I said something. The temporal lobe is located under your temples. Go figure. So the temporal lobe, understanding language. This is Wernicke's area, or because that doctor is German, I believe, Wernicke's area. Memory.
You will call him Wernicke, or we will make you regret that decision.
Guten Tag. Memory, hearing, sequencing, and organization, and language. All stored here.
Aphasia is a disturbance of language. I was just going down a bad spiral there, so I decided to hop off the ride.
Same way.
Yeah. Aphasia is a disturbance of language affecting speech production. I just imagine like all these people in your mouth and down your throat with like lights and cameras and stuff like that, all part of the speech production team.
I imagined it like a conveyor belt and there's letters going down and there's people pointing. I'm going to need 2 P's for this next one. 2 P's. Damn it, Johnny, your conveyor belt stopped. That's it.
Let me ask you this. Do you think in words or pictures?
Someone just turn the 6's upside down. We're going to use those as... Anyways, do I... I don't know.
Well, if you think of the word tree, do you think of the word tree or do you think of a tree? We'll get back to Chris on that a little bit.
So I'll tell you this. I think probably pictures, but I'm going to say this is probably one of those things that because it's about people, it's a spectrum. And it's going to vary from person to person. It's one of the things that I found that I'm actually very good at is describing to people how to do something or find something without being there.
Right.
And I'm always very good at that. And I think that because I can think in pictures, but I'm also very good at articulating things by words.
Right. But you're not thinking in the words. You're thinking in the pictures.
Yeah. But sometimes I do think of things in terms of the word itself.
Have you ever described to somebody how to do something like that guy on Sesame Street that just makes the noises?
Yes.
So aphasia, disturbance of language affecting speech production, comprehension, reading, or writing due to brain injury, most commonly from a stroke or from trauma. The type of aphasia depends on where the brain is damaged. Yeah, that makes sense. So Broca's area, lay it on me, man.
So Broca's area lies in the left frontal lobe. So if this area is damaged, and I alluded to this earlier, someone may have difficulty moving the tongue or facial muscles to produce the sounds of speech. The person can still read and understand spoken language just fine, but has difficulty in speaking and writing, forming letters and words, but doesn't write within the lines, for example. It's called Broca's aphasia. So this is something that when we do a stroke test on somebody, we will actually measure this in a way, or we'll see someone's ability to speak, is we'll have them try and say a sentence, and if their speech comes off slurred, that is an indication of damage to the Broca's area. And I think we might touch on this later. Sometimes people will produce words that are not even the words we ask, but are otherwise clear. That's damage to a different part of the brain. Right. But
do you ever ask those patients that are having some dysphagia if they're able to think of the words and not say them, or if they can't even think of the words?
I've never asked somebody that.
Okay. I'll do it on occasion when it seems pertinent to it. But, you know, if they look like they're really struggling, but you see the glimmer in their eyes of like they know what the hell they want to say. Are you having a hard time saying it, or can you not think of the words? And then they can't tell me because they're having a hard time saying it. So Wernicke's area. Are you there?
Wernicke's. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, Wernicke's.
So it lies in the left.
So the German army has a group of people, a group of POW prisoners out in the field, and they're all standing there, and their heads going one way, and they're saying tick, and their heads going the other way, and they're saying talk. So it's just back and forth, tick, talk, tick, talk, tick, talk. So there's one guy in the middle of the field, and he's just standing there, and he's going tick, tick, tick. And the German soldier walks up to him and goes, "We have ways to make you talk."
That's cute. I like that one. I don't think that one's that bad. He's, yeah.
Well, you know.
It's Nazis. More of a torture joke. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So left temporal lobe. Damage this area causes Wernicke's aphasia. The individual may speak in long sentences that have no meaning, adds unnecessary words, or even creates new words. They can make speech sounds, however, they have difficulty understanding speech and therefore unaware of their mistakes. Now, Wernicke syndrome. Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, this is something that comes on due to a lack of thiamin, or B1.
Fact. All right. Cortex.
I don't think there's a need for that kind of language, sir. I just saw your text message.
Oh, gotcha. So what's the Wernicke syndrome you're talking about?
So when you have a decrease, it's Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome. And as part of it, because, you know, Wernicke-Korsakoff, they both had to get their name on the damn paper.
Oh, yeah.
So this comes from a lack of thiamin. It's from patients who have been severely... starved. They've been, what's the word I'm looking for here? Malnourished.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Gotcha. No problem.
And Wernicke's. What it really became kind of an issue for us in EMS was a number of years ago, like 10 or 15 years ago, we started carrying thiamin specifically for, because the most common in developed countries, the most common cause of Wernicke-Korsakoff's is alcoholism.
Oh.
Because people tend to not eat properly. They just drink their calories when they're alcoholics, when they're severe alcoholics for long term. And so we would get there and their blood sugar would be low and we would give them D50 and it would actually kick in Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome unless we gave them vitamin B1, which is thiamin.
I remember that we used to...
We carried it for about a year until we realized that, yeah, we've never really had a case of that in this county. We're prepared to treat something that we've never had to treat, you know. So, yeah, and it's basically, it's, I had a patient who was in Wernicke's who was an alcoholic. We didn't give D50 to, but he was having this he was having periods of like lucid speech followed by periods of just garbled messes.
Oh yeah. You know?
Huh. And they didn't understand, they never could recognize the difference between the two. In their mind, they were speaking perfectly normal the entire time.
Nice.
And we took him into local hospital code 3, and it was weird because, you know, we do really love our local fire guys. So our fire medics, you know, we have a good working relationship with them.
We say this disclaimer a lot.
Well, no, because it's usually followed by the thing is they're very sweet people, but there comes that point on scene where you got to be the jerk.
Yeah.
You know, of, okay, we because they're always like, okay, we need to do this. How about we do that? And no, I'm not doing that. And then I'd be like, hey, can I try?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, go ahead. I'm like, dude, we're doing this. Let's go. Yeah. So they were trying to talk this guy into going to the hospital. And he just wasn't having it.
No.
And then it was a very confusing conversation for him and, you know, everything like that. And finally, I was like, hey, do you mind if I talking to him? Yeah, we're going to get up. We're going to walk out. We're going to have a seat on our gurney. We're going to the hospital. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Let's go.
You dick.
Yeah, pretty much. But I tell you, I stood him up and he walked out to the gurney and sat down on the gurney. But yeah, before we left, the doc's like, yeah, I think he's got Wernicke's because it was alcoholism.
Wernicke's.
So the cortex.
The cortex. So,
which is funny. The surface of the cerebellum is called the cortex. Shouldn't it be the surface tex?
Yeah, you'd think. Cortex would be more of a central located structure.
Right. Yeah, more in the core. Yeah. Go ahead. Oh.
Yeah, so the surface of the cerebrum is called the cortex. It has a folded appearance with hills and valleys. So this is kind of when you get that image in your head of the brain, it looks like a collection of like fat worms. This is the part that makes the fat worms. Or maybe that's just how I describe it, but I think everyone's on the same page.
It definitely conjured a mental image I think people can relate to.
Yeah. So the cortex contains 16 billion neurons. And
with a B.
With a B, blah, 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 billion neurons. And the cerebellum has 70 billion. So that equals 86 billion in total. So I want to point that out really quick there. The cortex contains 16 billion neurons. And the cortex actually covers a large surface area. And the cerebellum, which I believe is technically smaller in size, contains 70 billion. So the cerebellum is a fairly compact device that's pretty dense with lots of smart things in it. Like I said, we don't do big words. So that are arranged, the 16 billion neurons are arranged in specific layers. So the nerve cell bodies color the cortex that gray-brown, giving it the name gray matter. Beneath the cortex are long nerve fibers, axons, that connect the brain areas to each other, and that's called white matter. So the folding of the cortex increases the brain's surface area, allowing more neurons to fit inside the skull and enabling higher functions. Each fold is called a gyrus, and each groove between the folds is called a sulcus. There are names for the folds and grooves. These are names for the folds and grooves that help define specific brain. There are names for the folds and grooves that help define the specific brain regions.
Going strong, Big Daddy. Bring it on.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. So, deep structures. So, pathways called white matter tracks connect areas of the cortex to each other. Messages can travel from one gyrus to another, form one lobe to another, from one lobe to another, from one side of the brain to the other, and structures deep in the brain. The hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus, this is located on the floor of the third ventricle and is the master control of the autonomic system. So your brain has ventricles in it. These are not like ventricles in the heart in the sense that they do not contract, or at least they shouldn't unless you have brain trauma. But basically,
and they're not tentacles.
What's that?
And they're not tentacles.
Then they're not tentacles. They are not. Good job, Mark.
So basically, a ventricle is going to be an open area filled with fluid.
It's a cavity. Yeah, it's a cavity.
But not like a cavity in your teeth.
Right, exactly. Unless you fill that thing with fluid.
Which hurts.
Dentist, no, I do not have a cavity. I have a ventricle. That's my dental ventricle. I'm an idiot. Yes, I am. But anyway, so... Yeah, so a ventricle, it's just basically it's a space in there. And in your brain, it contains cerebral spinal fluid, typically. So anyway, but the third ventricle, and is where the hypothalamus is located, and that is the master control of the autonomic system. So it plays a role in controlling behaviors such as hunger, thirst, sleep, and sexual response. It also regulates body temperature, blood pressure, emotions, and the secretion of hormones. The autonomic nervous system, I believe, is what is responsible for most of your involuntary functions.
So, like boners.
Like boners, or getting hungry, or being what thirsty.
When it controls all of those at the same time. So I'm hungry, thirsty, sleepy, and hard.
Exactly. Exactly. I see you rolling out of bed. All right.
Nope, can't roll.
Yeah. That's actually... I have this that I always tell trainees, and I heard this from my dad, and I don't know where he heard it. But... he'd get a new trainee because he was a paramedic and he was FTO as well, and be like, all right, so they'd be going over when to not give nitroglycerin. So nitroglycerin is a medication we give that dilates your blood vessels. Well, if someone has had a boner pill like Viagra, the two react poorly for the patient. In other words, it can drop their blood pressure substantially.
Well, they potentiate.
Yeah. And so what he would do is he'd sit them down and be like, all right, so, you know, what are some medications that react poorly with nitroglycerin? And they'd be like, oh, Viagra. Because at the time, Viagra was it. That was all that was on the market. And there wasn't, you know, Cialis wasn't a thing. And he's like, they'd be like, oh, Viagra. He goes, all right, and what is the generic name for Viagra? They'd be like, oh, it's, they'd guess, and they'd get kind of close, and he'd be like, it's a stop a cock cephalopin. So, yeah, stop a cock cephalopin. That is the generic name.
Generic name for Viagra.
Yeah. It's actually sildenafil, but still, stop a cock cephalopin. Anyway, so pituitary gland. So this lies in a small pocket of bone at the skull base called the cella Turcica. The cella turcica, which actually means Turkish saddle, because it is shaped like a Turkish saddle. And that's true. You can even Google that right now, Mark.
I'm good.
Okay. Normally calls me on that. Okay, I'm going to Google that because actually I'm not sure how right I am.
The pituitary gland is connected to the hypothalamus of the brain by the pituitary stalk, known as the master gland. It controls other endocrine glands in the body. That was my reference to...
Yes, it is Latin for Turkish seat. I was close. I was...
Saddle and a seat are two completely different things.
Yes.
And I say this, try putting a seat on a horse.
That is actually precisely what a Turkish saddle is. I'm going to Google it. I'll send you the picture.
Is it a high back sort of saddle?
Yeah, I believe it's for camels, but Turkish saddle. Oh, okay. Let's look it up here. Saddle. It is for horses. It is a high backed saddle, though, and it does resemble a chair. Okay. So.
I guess neener on me. So
I just love how you fucking mentioned. Try putting a chair on a seat on a horse. Like, that is precisely what they tried to do.
I was thinking something from like the dining room table, not an actual saddle.
You know what, man? I grew up with horses. You can throw a lot of stuff up there.
Okay. Known as the master gland, it controls the endocrine gland in the body. It secretes hormones. Keeps them away from everybody else. Doesn't tell you what's doing.
I want to control your body.
It secretes hormones that control sexual development. I wish I'd had that happen. Promotes bone and muscle growth.
Wait, what?
Growth. I got one of those. I got bone growth. And responds to stress.
Now, is this bone growth like we were talking about earlier with the hypothalamus?
No, this is like your actual bones. Okay. No. Hypothalamus is all about that. This is actual bones.
Okay, gotcha.
I just wish I'd gotten the muscles or the sexual development. You know?
You're actually a pretty strong guy.
I am. Hung like a cocktail wiener, though.
Am I editing that out, or am I leaving that?
I don't care. Everybody used to say he's hung like a can of tuna.
I mean,
he is 3 inches wide, 1 inch long. It takes me a while to get there, but when I get there, you know it. So then I sent him a picture of a number 10 can of tuna. Still hung like a can of tuna, man?
I didn't know that they numbered those by size. This is something I'm learning right now. I didn't know that's like, is there like a number 2 can? Or like...
Oh, I have no idea. I just know the big ones, the big industrial ones that they use in restaurants are number 10 cans.
Jesus Christ.
Because you have to have a number 10 can opener, which is mounted to the table. And you basically just kind of slam down in. And then you work in restaurants at some point?
I know. The closest I had, I worked at Safeway, and I worked at the deli for a little bit.
Yeah, you have, it's like a... It's a mount on the table, and then it's a big long post with the mechanism on top, like the tooth, and then a crank handle. And so you lift it up to the correct height, slide the can in, jam it down so that it pierced the lid, and then the handle came down, and you just cranked it all the way around until you got the lid off. Number 10 can. But on the other hand, the pineal gland.
No. Back to tuna cans, please.
No, I'm hung like a tuna can. Oh, so. Gotcha. The pineal gland, or the pineal gland, or the pineal gland, is hidden behind the third ventricle, the aforementioned third ventricle.
Really quick, everyone, it's pineal. Don't listen to this man.
It's pineal.
I know because I know.
It helps regulate the body's internal clock and circadian rhythms by secreting melatonin. That is why some people will take melatonin to help them sleep. And it has some creepy role in sexual development. The word creepy wasn't in there, but it just seems like it would be. Hiding behind the third ventricle, having some role in sexual development.
Yeah, it sounds a little shady. It's creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy.
It sounds like Chris Hansen needs to pay this man a visit.
So, man, you nailed the hypothalamus so well. Why don't you go with the thalamus?
Yeah, so I'm done. Thalamus. The thalamus serves as a relay station for almost all information that comes and goes to the cortex. It plays a role in pain sensation, attention, alertness, and memory. Oh, memory. Sorry, guys. That's memory. Yeah.
Man, you're...
Basal ganglia. These nuclei work with the cerebellum to coordinate fine motions such as fingertip movements like writing and those kind of things. The limbic system is the center of our emotions, learning, and memory. And Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about memory? Because I forgot. Sorry. That was fucking awful.
Go back and listen to our Alzheimer's episode if you want to learn more about the memory. The memory is a complex process that includes three phases. Encoding, deciphering what information is important, storing, and then recalling. Different areas of the brain are involved in different types of memory. Your brain has to pay attention and rehearse in order for an event to move from short-term to long-term memory, called encoding. Short-term memory, also called working memory, occurs in the prefrontal cortex. It stores information for about 1 minute, and its capacity is limited to about 7 items. For example, it enables you to dial a phone number someone just told you, or not in my case, because I usually, by the time I get my phone open, everything like that, I've forgotten the number. It also intervenes during reading to memorize a sentence you have just read so that the next one makes sense. Long-term memory is processed in the hippocampus of the temporal lobe and is activated when you want to memorize something for a longer time.
Activate!
Like the Power Rangers. They come together and act. Anyway, this memory has unlimited content and duration capacity. This is why I don't remember what I went into the kitchen for, but I can remember Led Zeppelin lyrics from the 70s. It contains personal memories as well as facts and figures. Skill memory is processed in the cerebellum, which relays information to the basal ganglia. It stores automatic learning memories, like tying a shoe, playing an instrument, or riding a bike. So this is what we refer to as muscle memory.
Which actually has nothing to do with your muscles. It's not stored in your muscles at all.
No, it's not. But you work a muscle over and over and over again and in a certain way, and the brain will remember it so that it's natural rather than having to stop and think about it.
I will say over and over again, I'm pretty sure you masturbate once and you never forget how to do that again.
Well, let's be honest. You're only doing one thing and it takes less than a minute. So, hung like a tuna can. ventricles. Ventricles and cerebrospinal fluid. Take it away, Mr. Fingston.
So the brain has hollow fluid-filled cavities, like we talked about earlier, called ventricles. Inside the ventricles is a ribbon-like structure called the choroid plexus that makes clear, colorless cerebrospinal fluid, CSF. CSF flows within and around the brain and the spinal cord to help cushion it from injury. This circulating fluid is constantly being absorbed and replenished. So,
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever checked for CSF on a patient in the field?
I have. You, really? Yeah, you and I have. You and I had a patient where it was positive. And you and I used that to this guy. You'll remember the patient immediately because he was a dick and needed to go to the hospital. He wouldn't. He was a guy who was skateboarding a skate park. And
oh, and it was partially frozen.
What's that?
Was it partially frozen?
Partially frozen?
Like part of it was, the sun hadn't got to parts of it. And there was still like frost and ice on the ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like black ice.
Yeah.
That was literally, that's not where I was going with it. I just grabbed it as soon as I saw it. I
know you did. But so what, Mark's talking about is, it's actually something we'll look for is if someone's bleeding from the ear.
It's a magical thing called black ice that nobody can account for.
So black ice.
So anybody's listening to the podcast for a period of time, go make a cup of coffee. We're going to be here a minute. New people, stay and listen. Yeah.
So black ice and why I fucking hate the term. Here's the thing. Ice is clear. Okay. It's the color of the road beneath it. Maybe there's some dirt in it. It might change the color a little bit. But the reason I don't like black ice, I'm not saying that there's not ice out there that's hard to see. Absolute truth. But Mark and I go on motor vehicle accidents all the damn time when it gets icy out, and we hear the same fucking thing over and over again. And that is, oh, I hit some black ice. And they say it as if because it is now black ice, clearly the accident is not their fault. It was out of their control. Who could have possibly seen this coming? And I'm like, I know who saw it coming. The 1,400 people that went through this very intersection and didn't end up in the telephone pole, you jackass. This wasn't black ice. This was you seeing water on the ground, thinking it's fucking water, not realizing it's physically impossible for it to be water because it's 29 degrees out there. The physical properties of water do not change based on your stupidity. If it is below 32 degrees and it looks wet on the ground, it is not. It is ice. Don't drive fast through it.
And I'm the one that is real as a hard touch when describing people's stupidity.
So CSF, one of the tests that we'll do when someone has a head injury is we'll take like a 4x4, which is just a, it's like a piece of gauze, and we'll dab blood that's coming out of the ear. And what you do is you look at it, and if there's cerebral spinal fluid in it, it'll separate out. It'll form a little yellow ring around your dot of blood. And Mark and I had a guy who was skateboarding, and he slipped off the skateboard and he cracked his head pretty good. And some bystanders were like, yeah, he was out. He lost consciousness. And he was kind of a rebellious dude. And he's like, I don't need to go to the hospital. You can't fucking make me. And it was one of those things where I'm like, all right. And so we did the little test and I'm like, hey, I think it's positive for CSF. And Mark kind of looked at it. And I think the reason you don't remember is that you had already made up your mind that this guy's going to the hospital, kind of like we all had.
Oh, yeah.
And it really didn't change. And here's the thing about that test. It doesn't change what we're going to do. I mean, if we're testing for it and there's blood coming out of the ear.
You look cool when you get to the hospital.
That's it. Yeah. Because here's the thing. If there's blood coming out of their ear after a head injury, you're not going to just be like, you know what? He probably has a cut in his ear. You're not going to think that. You know, you're going to think, yeah, it's coming from somewhere. Because here's the other problem, too, is there could be, your test might not work. You might get a false negative. So for me, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm not going to let that be the determining factor in what I'm doing anyway. But it was fun to do. I think I might have been.
Right. But and what it is it's indicative that you probably have a basilar skull fracture.
Yeah, which is exactly what this guy had. A basilar skull fracture is essentially a skull fracture that goes all the way around the base of your skull. I guess that part's obvious. But anyway.
Well, it wasn't called a topular skull
fracture. Fair enough. But yeah, and that's it. Believe it or not, getting a skull fracture is bad news bears. Because like we talked about, you can start bleeding in there. You can get compression on your brain. You can die. That's never good. And so anyway, so this guy, he was just not in the hospital, And finally, we're like, you're fucking going to the hospital. And he went to the hospital. We took him up to the trauma center. And we stopped back in there later on a completely unrelated call. Mark steps in to check in. And this guy looks at Mark and goes, yeah, I guess I have a pretty bad skull fracture. I don't think he ever said thank you, but I think that was as
close. I think that was as close as we were.
That was as close as we were going to get for him being like, yeah, I'm glad I'm here. So, yeah. So there you go. Right. So there are two ventricles deep within the cerebral spinal fluid.
Cerebral hemispheres.
I'm sorry. Two ventricles deep within the cerebral hemisphere called the lateral ventricles. They both connect with the third ventricle through a separate opening called the foramen of Monroe. The third ventricle connects the fourth with the fourth ventricle.
Oh, foramen.
What?
Foramen of Monroe.
Oh, foramen. What did I say?
Foramen.
It is called, that is foramen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's not spelled it.
Yeah, it is. Foramen. Foramen.
Oh. Oh, I see what you're doing there. Okay, never mind. Disregard.
I just think of the foramen magnum. And then so,
yeah. Right. Is it spelled the same way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Frame is just a hole.
Okay.
Anyway, the third ventricle connects with the fourth ventricle through a long, narrow tube called the aqueduct of Sylvius. From the fourth ventricle, CSF flows into the subarachnoid space where it bathes and cushions the brain. I don't know why bathe cracked me up. I just imagine a brain in a bubble bath, someone scrubbing its hair. Grabbing the little thing.
Somebody giving it a back rub.
Yeah, you know. grabbing a cup of water, being like, now close your eyes as you rinse the shampoo off. Yes, I have kids, and that's obvious. So the subarachnoid space, I'll describe that a little bit. You have, so you got your brain, and your brain is surrounded by these layers of tissue. And you have the dura mater, which is the outermost layer of tissue. It's a tough tissue. It actually, I believe dura mater stands for tough mother. Then you have the arachnoid layer, which is underneath that. And then under that, you have the pia mater. So the subarachnoid space is a space below the arachnoid layer. And so it's just, if you fill that up with fluid, it goes all the way around the brain and provides a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of barrier. So, the nervous system. Mark, take it away.
I was looking up to see if, I mean, it's not that I doubted this tough mother. I just think it's actually cooler if that's what it means.
I believe that's exactly what it means, but I could be wrong too. It's happened once.
No, I'm not doubting you. I'm just like, dude, I want to read it just because that's just rock star. Yeah, I'm a tough mother. Wouldn't sound the same if you saw a biker telling people he was the dura mater.
Right.
Get away from my bike. I'm the most dura mater man in here.
I'm the most tough mother man. Mm-hmm. It says he likes tough, like he likes tough mothers. So am I right?
I stopped looking up because you're making me do the nervous system. I have to go to work.
Oh, sorry. Well, I will look it up then.
The nervous system. The nervous system of vertebrates, including humans, is divided into a central nervous system, or CNS, and a peripheral nervous system, or the PNS.
God, we're immature.
The CNS is the major division and consists of the brain and the spinal cord. The spinal canal contains the spinal cord, while the cranial cavity contains the brain. So your skull, the cranial cavity. The CNS is enclosed and protected by the meninges, a three-layered system of membranes, which we just talked about, including a tough, leathery outer layer called the dura mater. The brain is protected also by the skull and the spinal cord by the vertebrae. The peripheral nervous system, the PNS, is a collective term of for the nervous system structures that do not lie within the CNS. The large majority of the axon bundles called nerves are considered to belong to the PNS, even when the cell bodies of the neurons to which they belong reside within the brain or spinal cord.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, the dura mater derives from the Latin for tough mother.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. It's even better. I'm start telling people I'm a, well, let's see, what's Latin for fucker?
I don't, are you saying fuck her or fucker?
No, fucker. Like, so I'm a tough motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I don't know. Let's see. Apparently it says a loan translation of Arabic. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, so apparently in Arabic, Arabic actually borrows a few words from Latin. And so you can actually, there an Arabic meaning of dura mater means thick mother. Okay. So the original Latin means tough mother, but for if you say it in Arabic, because they borrow the word dura from Latin, except for them it means thick, it's a thick mother. So dura mater or thick mother. I'm going to stick with dura mater. That's better than thick mother.
Yeah. Yeah. The PNS is divided into somatic and visceral parts. The somatic part consists of nerves that innervate the skin, joints, and muscles. The visceral part, are also known as the autonomic nervous system, contains neurons that innervate the internal organs, blood vessels, and glands. The autonomic nervous system itself consists of two parts, the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. Tell us about those two systems, Chris.
Fuck yeah, I will.
And just so you know, I didn't do any research on them.
Sweet. Let's see.
This is all from Chris's brain.
The nervous system. Okay. So the nervous system of vertebrates, including humans.
Dude.
Yeah.
Just read all that.
Well, I was looking up dura mater.
We're down to soma. I was going to have you tell the difference between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system.
Oh, sweet. So, where is that?
There's no, and that's why I said there's no research
for it. Oh, perfect. So I'll just talk about it then. All right. So you have the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. We're going to start with sympathetic nervous system. So the way I like to think of that, the way it helps me remember it, is the sympathetic nervous system is sympathetic to your needs, in the sense that what happens with the sympathetic nervous system, this is also your fight or flight system. So when your sympathetic nervous system is triggered, you often get the release of neurotransmitters such as epinephrine, or hormones such as epinephrine. And what's going to happen is a couple things. So when your sympathetic nervous system is triggered, it's going to increase your heart rate. It's going to release something called epinephrine and norepinephrine. You're also going to have your pupils are going to dilate to allow more light in to be able to see more things. Your heart rate's going to increase and your breathing's going to increase so that you can provide more oxygenated blood to your muscles so that they could fight or flight. Well, actually, fight, flight, or freeze is actually the new thing they're teaching. Which freeze just doesn't seem to help much unless a predator is chasing you, in which case it might be a good tactic. I don't know. But anyway, and it's going to generally do things to rev you up and get you going to where you can.
Causes your liver to dump glucose into your system.
Yes. And glucose is good, fast energy. So that's going to help you get moving, too. Now, the parasympathetic system, also known as the feed or breed system, is going to do the opposite of that. It's going to slow things down. It's going to increase gastric motility. It's a parasympathetic system. So the feeder breed system. And so this is going to increase gastric motility and sexual functions as well. So
also that's also called the rest and digest.
Sure. Rest and digest. Which is
something similar. Yeah.
feed and breed. Now, one of the things that I like...
Feed and breed, America.
All right. Paramedics actually know the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system pretty well in the sense that what we do is we manipulate it quite a bit in quite a few of our treatments. So, for example, let's take bradycardia. Okay, so bradycardia just means slow heart, and that's basically when your heart rhythm is slow. Now, bradycardia isn't always a bad thing, but sometimes it certainly can be. Sometimes your heart can be so slow that it's not pumping blood adequately. So we as paramedics decide that we're going to manipulate some nervous systems to make this work again. There's a few ways that we can do it. One way is to give epinephrine. Okay, this is basically mimicking. So epinephrine is actually called a sympathomimetic, which is basically we're mimicking the drug epinephrine is called a sympathomimetic. When it's in a syringe for us to give, that's a sympathomimetic in the sense that we are mimicking the sympathetic nervous system. If it's released in your body as epinephrine, that's not a sympathomimetic. It's not mimicking the sympathetic nervous system. It is the sympathetic nervous system. So That aside, when we administer epinephrine, that's essentially like putting our foot on the gas to speed things up. Okay. And it works pretty darn well. Well, another thing that we can do if someone's heart rate is too slow, we can give atropine. So sometimes things can happen that's in your body that'll stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. One common thing that Mark and I will deal with is we'll go on that older patient that has been eating food too fast and they swallow a big bolus of food and it puts pressure in their oropharynx. And that will actually cause pressure on the vagus nerve, which then stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system and slows things down. So what we
hopefully,
that's what it should do. But sometimes it slows things down too much. What Mark and I can do is we can give a drug called atropine. And atropine will allow the heart to speed up, not by putting a foot on the gas and stimulating sympathetic nervous system, but by taking your foot off the brake and stopping the stimulus of the parasympathetic nervous system. And that is two ways that we manipulate both of those systems to treat something.
It's very true. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Soma. So
moving on.
So the right. So the actual neurons. The soma is a cell body of a neuron that contains a nucleus and other structures common to living cells.
If you these want structures a body support the, and you think I'm sexy,
if you want soma.
Come on, baby, let me know.
Wow. Just so everybody knows, this is like after midnight.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we're getting a little giddy here.
It's a long episode. We're like an hour and 7 minutes into this.
Yeah, I know. We still got like 9 pages left.
Oh, fuck.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
Tune in for part two next week.
Click.
Toast.
These structures support the chemical processing of the neurons, which the most important of which is the production of neurotransmitters. Neurons are the fundamental units of the brains and the nervous system. The cells responsible for receiving sensory input from the external world and sending motor commands to our muscles. So, for transforming and relaying electrical signals at each step in between. And more than that, their interactions define who we are as people. So this would be like in Star Trek, this would be the neural net that Data had that would crash at many times except for on Data and his brother Lore, and then another one he tried to. I can't remember his the one he created his name. Can't remember
Nerd.
Him. But yeah, they would... Nerd alert, which is Chris's ringtone.
It is when I call him, it goes,
so yes. as these develop, the way they develop determines who we are as people. You have axons, which typically carry signals away from the cell body.
Then you have axoffs. Axon? Axoff.
There are long nerve processes that may branch out to convey signals to various areas. Some axons and axoffs are wrapped in an insulating coat of glial cells called... Chris, go ahead.
Why do you do this to me?
Oligodendrocytes.
I think I know this one. What are you under?
I'm on axons, right at oligodendrocytes.
That's exactly how it's pronounced, oligodendrocytes. Yeah. I actually knew that one.
And Schwann cells, which you can get from the Schwann salesman with your ice cream.
Yeah, I've never actually had Schwann ice cream.
Me neither, but it's supposed to be pretty good. This stuff's supposed to be really good.
I've seen the trucks all over the place.
Yeah. They also sell like meat and stuff like that.
That's a weird combination.
No, it's basically anything frozen.
Oh, it's not like steak-flavored ice cream.
They're all freezer trucks, you know. So, these cells form the myelin sheath, which is indirectly assists in the conduction of impulses, as myelinated nerves can conduct impulses quicker than unmyelinated ones. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Hey, can you pick it up?
Yeah. You good?
Yeah, I just got a nosebleed.
No. Yeah. I might even leave that in. I don't know. Gaps. Yeah. Gaps between the myelin sheath are called nodes of Ranvier. God, that sounds like something out of like a fantasy, like a Lord of the Rings. The nodes of Ranvier. All right, moving on. dendrites typically carry signals toward the cell body. Dendrites are usually more numerous, shorter, and more branched than axons. They have many synapses in order to receive signal messages from nearby neurons. So, shall we finally jump into neuroplasticity? Mark? Oh, he must have left the room. I hope he's not dead. So I pretty much think Mark's face has fallen off. I don't think it's just a nosebleed. So for all the listeners out there, he's alive. Fuck, I thought I finally got the show to myself. All right.
I'm sitting here with a piece of tissue paper stuffed up my nostril.
Sweet. So neuroplasticity. Yeah. Actually, I finished the episode, so toast. If you can.
Okay, well.
No, hey. I'm joking.
Toast.
Neuroplasticity. So let's go ahead and touch on what Mikey actually wanted.
Right.
So our brains are constantly being shaped by experience. So most of us have very different behaviors and thoughts today than we did 20 years ago. This shift is neuroplasticity in action. Changes in the brain structure and organization as we experience, learn, and adapt. So with every repetition of a thought or an emotion, we reinforce a neural pathway. And with each new thought, we begin to create a new way of being. These small changes, frequently enough repeated, lead to changes in how our brains work. So, neuroplasticity is the muscle-building part of the brain. The things we do often, we become stronger at, and what we don't use will fade away. This is the physical.
Well, like learning a new language.
Yeah, learning a new language.
You can put all the all the effort in the world into learning a new language, but if you don't have somebody to practice with on a regular basis, you're gonna forget it. Yeah,
absolutely. And this is the physical basis of why making a thought or action over and over again increases its power. So over time, it's going to become automatic, a part of us. We literally become what we think and do. So what was I going to say? I thought I had something profound to say as I read that, but
I think we all know that you don't.
Right, and I think maybe that's where I went wrong, was thinking I had something profound to say in the first place.
Right, that was the first mistake.
Yeah, that just threw me for a loop. Now, who knows? So, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Like I said, when I looked into neuroplasticity, it was either this kind of thing, because I tried looking into, like, well, what's the future of neuroplasticity? And unless you were getting really deep into the functions of the brain, mm-hmm. there wasn't really anything Mark and Chris level.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Chris level stuff, but not Mark and Chris.
Right. Well, because Chris definitely carries the show.
You know what? So, here's the thing. What I like about that is that is a better view.
We all know it.
That we have. I don't think that guy knows, because I doubt he still listens, but I hope he does, because that is a better view that we have just turned into. A running gag. And it's now part of the show. Like, he just gave us content and we just love it.
Right. Well, you know, and I didn't have an issue with it because it's the guy's honest opinion. And I appreciate honest opinions. But, and I've asked people around, and I'm assuming this is something, because this where I heard this was in Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma.
Was referring to somebody as Nobi Jin. And apparently it's not as common as I thought it was.
Huh.
So, you know.
Yeah, but it's also one of those things where I thought when you said it, it was fairly obvious that you were, that you knew what you were doing was a slang. Because when I go back and listen to it, I'm like, it sounds like he's, it didn't even hit my radar. It was just such a weird thing for someone to pull out. And I would still question, yeah, your honest opinion is fine. But one phrase from one person on the show, and you still like the other half of the show, me. Come on, that's 2.5 stars.
You obviously know, you seem to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So. You still like the other.
And I think we've both proven over and over again that rarely do we know what we're talking about.
It's one of those things that, now here's the thing. We're actually reviewed very well on iTunes, and we do appreciate your guys' reviews. I think
absolutely. Please leave them all, because the more, especially if you feel comfortable giving us a 5-star, 4-star review, because the more that times that happens, that gets us on lists, which puts us in the public eye, so that people see us, more other people can find us.
Sorry, they just yawned in everybody's ear.
I think we're like a 4.7.
That's what you guys want. What's that?
I think we're like a 4.7.
4.5, Mr. Inflator. Oh, okay. Actually, so I'm looking at iTunes. Our iTunes rating is currently loading. 4.4. We're 4.4, but still, 4.4 is good. We are pretty happy.
No, no, I'm here. Sorry, I was reading a review.
Oh, got you.
So anyway, that's all I have on the brain. Chris, how about you?
That's it for me.
Mikey, again, thank you for the idea. I'm sorry it didn't really blossom into anything bigger, but by the time I got through the research on the brain, you know, it was pretty thick to begin with. And then, like I said, the Chris and Mark level of information for...
Mikey, I'm sorry we suck.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate your support. So, and we appreciate you contacting us. Yeah, so if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff. We're also on Instagram at MedicalStuff52 and on Facebook at MedicalStuff.
If you'd like to send us an email, please do. And our email address is MedSideStuff@yahoo.com. That was an old commercial they used to have.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Was it Bruce Almighty when he created an email program to take care of people's prayers? It was Yahweh. I thought it was pretty funny. So if you want to get a hold of us, please let us know. If you have any ideas for a podcast, we will do the best we can to turn it into the podcast that you want to. But unfortunately, like today, Mikey's suggestion today, which I was actually really excited about, it got kind of sidetracked. So, but that does not mean that we do not appreciate that. And we appreciate all the listen. We're going to have some exciting stuff come up over the next week or so. So please listen in. And until next time,
toast.
Well, we nailed that one.